I believe that every father has the ability to invest in and raise a healthy, godly man of God, you know, in his child. And so he's got to tap into that and say, okay, he may be different than me, but how can I connect with him?
Welcome to the Mama Bear Apologetics Podcast,
a podcast where we teach you to roar like a mother.
And by roar, we mean recognize the message, offer discernment, argue for a healthier approach, and reinforce these ideas with your kids.
Unless you want to growl around your house. I mean, that's cool too. You're like, check it. We keep it reals. That's so bad.
You're awesome.
Mama Bear Apologetics is a listener-supported program, so if you like what we do, head on over to the Mama Bear Apologetics website and click support.
It's time to rise up, ladies.
Rise up, Mama Bears. This might not affect your faith,
but it might affect your children's. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another Mama Bear Apologetics podcast, a podcast dedicated to helping you raise children who think critically, love biblically, and stand firm in the faith using truth and reason. I am very excited today because I get to have a friend of mine, Ricky Shillette, on our podcast. And Ricky Shillette, he is part of an amazing ministry called Living Hope Ministry. And we're going to be tackling a very important issue on how to raise gender-healthy boys and girls. So, Ricky, just thank you so much for coming on. And I would love for you to tell our listeners a little bit about your ministry.
Well, thank you, Amy. I'm so excited to be here with you guys and love what you folks are doing at Mama Bear Apologetics and thinks it's amazing. I think it's amazing. I tell everybody about it. So I'm so glad y'all are doing what you're doing. Living Hope's been around for 35 years, and we walk with folks and journey with folks who are struggling with gender identity, whether that's same-sex attractions, which is primarily the group that we seem to minister to, but also just any kind of gender confusion, as well as the friends and family of those who love them. And so we have support groups that meet. We have seminars that we do at churches. We have a hope house for young men who are struggling with this issue to kind of get away from maybe the entanglements that they may have at the time and work this stuff out. So we have a bunch of different offerings that we do. We also, just this year, have started a thing called the Institute of Biblical Sexuality, where we go into churches trying to help them understand just a biblical worldview of sexuality and be able to talk about that openly. So,
man, just a few things. Golly, that's incredible.
Just a few things.
Yeah. And I love that worldview focus and the focus on parents too, because we encounter a lot of family members who are like, well, I've got maybe a sister or a child, a cousin, whomever, and they are looking for someone to talk to about this. And it sounds like that's something that you guys kind of offer there, is that support for the family as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. We get quite a few calls, especially lately, of, you know, moms and dads and uncles and sisters and friends that have folks that, you know, have come out to them and they're like, well, you know, we love Jesus and we want to stand by the word of God. But at the same time, we know we need to love our loved one. And so how do we do that and be biblical without compromising the word of God? Absolutely. And it is an interesting walk for sure, but it's something that can be accomplished. And if we love people well, we must speak truth to them. And so we help them to do that, give them support in that process and, you know, pray for the best.
Wow. That's fantastic. And, you know, Ricky and I, we've been doing a conference together and his sessions are always jam-packed. And so when I was listening in, I was taking notes on my phone just furiously. I was like, I have got to have him on the podcast. So what we're going to look at today, moms, dads, grandparents, is how to raise gender-healthy kids. But specifically in this one, we're going to focus on the boys. And I know just in doing conferences around the country, that's a question that I get asked a lot. You know, how can I help bring up my child? And so my first question here is, you know, what is sort of the importance of nurturing that gender healthy young boy?
Well, it's super important. And I am convinced after, you know, being involved with this now personally for the last 25 plus years, walking with folks who struggle, particularly males who struggle with same-sex attraction or gender confusion, what I've seen is how important those really early days are in their life, that 0 to 10 time period where, you know, parents are heavily involved in their kids' life, and how the actions and responses of parents often greatly impact the child's perception of themselves and really lay the foundation for how that child is then going to perceive themselves in relationship to the rest of the world. And so as you, you know, invest in your child, as you spend time with your child, it's really important to make sure that you're understanding kind of how God has gifted that child. Mm. And what you basically see in that process is kind of, I talk about it in terms of two extremes, one that's a very sensitive boy and one that's a more rough and tumble boy. Mm. Now, experience would tell me that, and from the testimony of the thousands of folks I've talked to over the last 25 years, that basically the folks who are most prone to struggle with any kind of gender confusion are going to be the sensitive boys. Mm. And I would also argue that they're the ones who are the least talked about in our culture, except for in negative ways.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting, you know, just even watching some of the shows and things that are on TV for kids, that you often see kind of this polarized display of the rough and tumble as well as the sensitive. And usually the rough and tumble, I'm noticing in a lot of cartoons, they're almost depicted as, you know, maybe the bad character, the bad guy, that sort of thing. Whereas more as the sensitive, quiet, that's more of the either the victim or the ideal character that can be strived for. And then even to throw that in with stereotypes that we see in culture, I could see how those young years are really influential, not only because of what the kid is taking in from their own media consumption, but perhaps maybe the expectations of the parents. And can that maybe, can maybe those parental expectations of what a boy should be affect how that child is even secure in who they are?
Oh, absolutely. And I think so much of the expectation of a boy is communicated through interactions with his father. And sometimes what we see is, for instance, you'll have a really rough and tumble dad who is very involved in sports and all kind of physical activities and mechanics and hunting and all those sorts of things. And then he has a little sensitive son who really has no interest in any of those things and maybe is very artistic or creative or musical or something like that. And then all of a sudden that little boy sees what the dad likes and realizes that he doesn't really have a lot of common interest with his father. Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden begins to go, gosh, you know, I'm really not that kind of boy. And if I was, maybe my dad would love me more. Mm-hmm. Now, again, that's often not communicated by the dad directly, but there are those subtle things that the boy picks up on and he perceives that that disconnect is greater than it actually is.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And that I can definitely see how that's going to affect things, as we're going to get to in a minute. But I really want to pause for a second and kind of hone in on, you know, this sensitive and rough and tumble. I mean, obviously there's range, right? It's never quite black and white. But can you maybe describe a little bit sort of the characteristics of the rough and tumble versus the sensitive kid? So maybe our parents can better recognize, okay, maybe my child is leaning more this way, personality-wise, that sort of thing.
Sure. Yeah, personality-wise, we kind of divide it into two groups. That rough and tumble is usually noticed pretty early on in life. He's a boy that wants to express his emotions and physicality. So he wants to, you know, if he's upset, he's punching a hole in the wall or tackling his sister or drop-kicking the cat across the den.
Right.
You know, something like that. He really loves being physical. He loves also being in groups of other boys. And so he is kind of naturally drawn toward what we call kind of the all-American sports, football, basketball, baseball, soccer, just any kind of outdoor activity probably is something, or wrestling, things like that. I mean, he really loves to exert his physical sense as a way of expressing his emotions and how he's feeling about things. And so even in talking with him a lot of times and communicating with him, it's often best to be somewhat physical in the way that you do it. Now, I'm not talking about corporal punishment here, but I'm talking about the idea of like, he wants to experience and see what it is that you're talking about, like show me kind of things. Whereas a sensitive boy is kind of on the opposite end of that spectrum. He's going to be not so physical. He doesn't want to express his emotions that way. He's more inclined to express his emotions in creative, artistic, emotional, expressive kinds of ways. So he's drawn toward, you know, music or gaming or, but gaming, if it's creative, not necessarily if it's shoot 'em up kind of gaming.
Right.
From Tumble.
Yeah.
But you know, just very creative in the way that he sees things. And he tends to be much more intuitive and aware of the things around him than Tumble kid. So people's emotions impact the sensitive boy much more so than a rough and tumble boy. You know, a rough and tumble boy comes in and mom is crying at the kitchen table. Well, he notices she's crying, but he's like, Mom, why are you crying? Why are you sad? you know, and she says, oh, I'm okay. He goes, oh, okay. And then he moves, you know, the sensitive boy sees mom crying. Mom, what's wrong? What happened? And then he goes over to her and she's like, oh, I'm okay. He's like, no, mom, you're not okay. Like, you're crying. And then he sits down, he puts his arm around her. He's like, tell me what's wrong, mom. Like, what can I do? You know, I mean, he's really in tune with that emotive reality.
Wow. And you know, what came to mind is thinking about that rough and tumble. You talked about doing things with the child. I'm thinking of, you know, I've got a house of three boys, to where we found that if they're able to do something physically, whether it's like a project, cleaning up, building something, or even just going for a walk, they're better able to maybe express themselves because they've got that physical aspect in there. Whereas I've got one kid who's definitely more on the emotional side. He's one that's a lot easier. You just sit down and he will just talk your head off. I mean, no prompting, no, you know, it's not murder to get them to express themselves. Whereas the others, we almost have to be more strategic. So that's fascinating that there's that difference there between the rough and tumble. And
in fact, I often talk about the rough and tumble guys communicate shoulder to shoulder.
Yeah.
In other words, they will get next to each other doing something and talk about things. But they're not going to look each other in the eye and talk about things. Whereas sensitive boys are just the opposite. They want to do that eyeball to eyeball contact. Mm-hmm. And they will, just as you said, sit down and talk. You know, they love that. Yeah. Whereas a rough and tumble guy's like, let's go build something. Let's go shoot hoops, you know, let's go. And we'll talk while we do that. We may go fishing and we'll talk while we're fishing, but we're not going to ever look at each other.
Right. Ideally, no eye contact.
Right.
Hey, Mama Bears. So did you know that we breathe about 20,000 times a day and spend an average of 90% of our time indoors? I didn't know that. But the people at Air Doctor who are obsessed with this, they know these kinds of things. So the indoor air we breathe is actually sometimes 100 times more polluted than outdoor air. According to the EPA, we can have things that cause respiratory symptoms like sneezing, congestion, scratchy throat, especially if you're in my family. My husband is allergic to cats and we have a cat and I've just got all the allergies. But we have recently gotten something called an Air Doctor, and I gotta say the air just, I don't know, I haven't been sneezing as much and neither has he. So they filter out 99.99% of dangerous contaminants so your lungs don't have to. So we actually have an offer then from Air Doctor, who some people at Air Doctor appreciate what we do at Mama Bear, and so we want to appreciate them back. They have actually made a code specific for our MBA listeners. If you go over to airdoctorpro.com and use the promo code MBA, you can receive up to $300 off on some of their purifiers. Plus, you can get a 3-year warranty on any unit, which is another $84 value. So go on over to www.airdoctorpro.com. That's airdoctorpro.com, and use the promo code MBA.
Now, you talk about that there's three things that boys need, especially. And you mentioned that this is specifically from dad. So I find that interesting. The fatherly influence, especially in the son, is something that's really important. Yes?
Yes. And very important. And, you know, I mean, I talk about this when I do that talk, as you said, and I often say, you know, I don't know why God quite did it this way. Mm-hmm. I think if he'd given this to the woman, you know, she'd have put it on a chart and we'd been able to see when we finish and when we complete the task, and we'd have got some stars and check marks. But instead, what he did is he gave it to the father and said, hey, you're going to be the spiritual leader of the household, you know, because in a sense, you know, the family, I believe from scripture, represents our relationship with Christ and Christ's relationship to the church. 100%. And so the idea that, you know, there is this male headship, if you will, that is present, that doesn't mean that males are better than women. It's just simply they have a different responsibility. And one of those responsibility is to spiritually lead their home. And so this dad needs to speak into the life of the little boy in a way that the boy can understand it. Three important things: affirmation, attention, and affection. And affirmation means that the dad has to say to the little boy that you're good enough, you're strong enough, you have what it takes to be a man. I'm super proud of you. Mm-hmm. I'm with you on this journey and I love you. And he needs to communicate that to him really early and really often, and then demonstrate it to the little boy in the way he invests himself in the things that the little boy loves. Mm-hmm. And so it's super important for that little boy to know that who I am as a boy, who I am as my dad's son, is getting the approval of my father. And so he sees me as I am, and he affirms me in who I am.
Wow.
So that's the affirmation.
Yeah.
The affection is what you think it is. It's physical touch. It's it's loving on, hugging on, you know, fist bumping, tackling.
Tackling, wrestling. Yes. I was just going to say, like, the whole attacking dad, that's one thing that's crazy about, like, boys, because there are times where my husband will be in the room and my son will enter a room, and it's like there's a thing that happens to where they look at each other and all of a sudden they're just wailing on each other. And it's like, I don't know, I guess it's like the guy version of a hug, so.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, exactly. Well, and it very much is. I mean, if you think about it, even in terms of, I can remember in college, guys in the dorm, they wouldn't hug each other, but they would, you know, they would come by you and like hit you in the arm or punch you in the stomach or, you know, grab you in inappropriate places or things like that. I mean, just to show that, hey, you know, we see you, we know you're there. Yep. And I'm like, okay.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
But yeah, but that's just what guys do. I mean, they're very, very difficult, but they typically don't want to just hug in the way that you hug your mom, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So that's the physical part of it. Really important. And I tell preschool parents all the time that, you know, if you don't hug your child, if you don't physically demonstrate appropriate affection, then that creates a void that allows for the opportunity of people who are inappropriate with their affection to move in and your child receive it simply because they don't have any real thing to compare it to.
Yeah.
And so when you're starving, you know, even that which is bitter tastes sweet. So super important to get it healthily. And then the third thing is the attention. Attention for the rough and tumble boy is really, really different than the sensitive boy, in that the rough and tumble boy just is happy when dad is with him. Yeah. So proximity is kind of how I put it. If dad's just hanging out with me, then I'm super happy. I feel like dad is affirming me because his presence, you know, is there. I feel like, you know, he's probably going to give me some physical attention. In the sense of, like, you know, slap me on the back or fist pumping me or something to let me know, hey, man, I'm here, I'm with you, you know, high five, that kind of thing. And so that idea of being in proximity to my father and knowing that he wants me around is super, super important. Sensitive boys, on the other hand, they don't want so much proximity as they want presence. And as you know, as a female, presence is very different than proximity. You can be proximal and not present. So, you know, I can be watching, you know, a television program or ESPN or something on the TV and someone talk to me and I am proximal to them. I am in proximity to them, but I'm not really present with them until I shut the TV off and look out of my eyeball to eyeball.
Right.
And so that's what that little boy wants. He wants that eyeball to eyeball connection. And oftentimes what I've heard these young boys say that are sensitive is they'll say things like, well, you know, I mean, I remember when I was in the first grade and I came home and I got this really good, you know, grade on my assignment. And I went into my dad and he was reading, you know, a magazine. He had the TV on and I went up to the easy chair and I said, Dad, let me tell you about this neat thing. You know, look what I did. And Dad said, what is it, son? What is it?
Yeah.
Go ahead and tell me. And so he tells me, man, I made an A on this paper. And the dad's like, oh, that's really great. That's really great. We'll keep up the good work. And he never really looks at the sun, never really stops, never puts down the magazine. The little boy goes into the kitchen and say, mom's, I don't know, getting ready for dinner or something. And he says, mom, let me tell you what happened. Well, mom gets all excited. She picks up the little boy, puts him on the counter next to the dishes she's washing, whatever she's doing.
Yeah.
And she's eyeball to eyeball with him. And she looks directly at him. She says, okay, son, now what is it that you accomplished today? Tell me about it. And so he just waxes eloquently about all the things that happened in his great grade and she's excited.
Yeah.
But in that moment is that little boy really connected to his mother because she looked at him eyeball to eyeball, whereas he felt somewhat rejected by his father because though his father acknowledged in words what was happening and his joy over the son's accomplishment, he didn't really connect in that moment. And so it's super important for sensitive boys that they get that eyeball to eyeball connection with their dad and with their mom. You know, now, you know, explaining it in that big diagram that I do, I don't talk a lot about the mom giving the three A's, but she actually does that. And in fact, can perceive that dad isn't doing it and actually overdo it to the point that the boy kind of becomes entrapped with the mom and whatever females are in the picture and feels more comfortable with them than he does the males.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned that it's really important, especially by the age of 10, that the boys shift from kind of that primary nurturing of mom to now more being stewarded and discipled by dad and how important that is. Can you kind of explain why that's important at sort of this age?
Yeah, I think there's a really between like 4 and 10, little boys need to kind of disconnect somewhat from mom. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is not so much that they get mom out of their life, obviously, that's right. Not a good plan, but that they really do make that differentiation between, okay, wait, I'm more like my father mm-hmm. physically than I am like my mother. Mm-hmm. Now, he may have characteristics personality-wise that are more like his mom, but right. he realizes my physical form that God has created, the design of God in me, is really more like my dad. And so how do I do what my dad does? How do I mm-hmm. understand the things that are manly? What are the high risk things that we can do that mom may be really uncomfortable for me to do?
Right.
And so, you know, he wants to go out. I joke about it in terms of like, let's go kill something, dad. You know,
right.
Let's
yeah.
Let's go conquer the mountain. Let's go mm-hmm. dive off the cliff. Let's go swing from the tree where we don't know what's on the other side of the river, you know, kind of thing. Yeah. I mean, let's do the scary stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. And I love that because I've even seen that in my own house to where, you know, I'll go on a speaking engagement and I'm usually being text videos from either my son or my husband, like, hey, look what we did. And it's, hey, let's blow up Tannery in the backyard in the middle of a city and just see what happens. And I'm like, who thought yeah. this was a good idea? And
right, like, exactly.
The men did. And so yeah.
That's fun though. I mean, it's great fun, you know?
And they do. They love it. And it's kind of funny because you always think of, oh, you know, mom's about rules and dad's the fun one. But I love how you put it because it's important for that sort of manly development, that risk taking, that boldness, that they need to see that modeled by dad, not just to, okay, here's how I be bold and be a man, but also here's how I maybe regulate that testosterone healthfully and how I can be respectful and learn that self-control. Because there have been studies done that show that whenever there is an absence of father figures, there is an increase, especially in the males, in crime. And they've correlated it to, well, these little boys are not learning how to regulate their emotional outbursts, their self-control, because when they wrestle with dad, they learn, okay, well, here's how we wrestle. Here's what's not appropriate. No, you can't kick that. No, we can't do this with girls because we need to be respectful. And when that there's an absence of that, boys actually don't learn how to develop healthy, manly characteristics and how to regulate those natural feelings, emotions, all of those things.
Yeah, that is absolutely spot on because it's super important for them to witness that and experience that. And it helps the young boy realize that part of his responsibility as a male and part of how God built him is to protect and provide, you know?
Mm, yeah.
And so he's able to in that moment say, wow, okay, I can wrestle with my dad. And yeah, we can go too far. And he's got to push me back a little and say, okay, let's rein that in.
Right,
but at the same time, I get to experience the strength of masculinity.
Right.
And to realize, wow, I do have like strength like my father does, you know, and that's going to grow as I get older. But at the same time, I can't let that strength be unleashed. Because unrestrained, it could become dangerous. Mm. But with my dad, he can show me, okay, hey, this is how you do this. This is how you respect women. This is how you treat people, you know, that sort of thing. But at the same time, let's take risk. You know, let's go out there and do that.
Yeah.
And again, that's not to say moms don't take risk. Obviously they do.
Yep.
But in that kind of setting with the father, the risks are calculated.
Yeah.
And safe.
Yeah. What's interesting is it brings to mind Proverbs 22:6. And we always see these on like baby shower cards, you know, train up your child in the way that he shall go. And when he's old, he will not depart from it. But what's packed into that verse is this intimate knowledge of the child. And you are to train them up in a way that appeals to their sort of natural personality, their natural desires. You're building, you're playing to their strengths, but you're also building up their weaknesses. So it's not this whole, well, I'm coming in as a parent and I'm having a boy and this is what I imagine a boy to be. And therefore I'm going to make that boy fit this idea that I have. It's okay. Exactly. Let me meet my boy. Who is he? What is he amazing at? What does he struggle with? And then how can I build him up in those areas while stewarding him in biblical discipleship to help make a godly man. So I'm thinking of the parents who, you know, they're kind of like a Jacob and Esau, and they're not quite clicking maybe with the Jacobs of the group. What happens if you've got a dad and he's like, man, I just don't know what to do with this kid. You know, maybe they don't feel like they're on the same wavelength. Like, what advice do you have for parents who maybe are struggling to connect with their child?
Yeah. And we get a lot of questions from dad. I get a lot of questions from dads about, hey, can you coach me on what I need to do? What do I need to say? I don't think this way. I don't communicate this way.
Yeah.
And one of the simple things I tell dad, and it sounds a little awkward when I just say it, but I think you'll get what I'm trying to get at.
Right.
Is that I tell dads, I said, at some level, you kind of need to date your son.
Okay.
And they're like, date my son. Like, what does that mean? I was like, well, remember when you were dating your wife? And I said, you would speak these really sweet things to her. You would say these kind words to her. You would always be expressing, you know, how you feel and how you feel about her and how you're enjoying the moment and what was good and all this kind of stuff. I said, those are the kind of things that a sensitive boy, especially when he's younger, really needs to hear from dad. Yeah. I said, so if you date him, and by that, I mean, you know, obviously once a week, once a month, every other week, something, but you spend specific time with him. I have a good friend of mine who every single night, he says, I spend 15 to 30 minutes with each of my kids one-on-one at their bedside. We pray, we talk about the day, we say, what did you learn? What's gone on? You know, what happened? He gives them an opportunity to just talk. So he said, even if our day's been crazy, you know, he said, we have those 15 to 30 minutes that we're there just saying, hey, man, unpack this for me. Or he said, sometimes if we've had a really bad day and I've had to correct him and things have gone kind of bad and he's upset, we can even go back and review that, because by that point, maybe he's calmed down a whole lot and we can say, okay, you know, man, we had a tough day today. Wasn't it difficult? Like, what did you think went wrong? You know, talk to me about that.
Yeah.
And just sit there and listen, you know, to that kid. So you don't have to be a sensitive or a rough and tumble dad to be able to understand your child. Mm-hmm. You know, I look at children as these are God's unbelievable, precious gifts that he's given to you in this package that you don't quite know what's inside yet,
you know? That's true.
And so it's almost like, you know, when I was a little kid, my mom was famous at Christmas time for wrapping things for Christmas in multiple boxes.
Oh,
because
man.
She never wanted us to guess what she was getting us.
Right.
And so she would have, like, you know, you'd have this great big box, you'd be shaking it, trying to think, what in the world is this, you know? And she'd put bricks in the bottom of it and all kind of stuff just to throw us off.
That's awesome.
But she would wrap box upon box upon box upon box. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it would take us, you know, 5-10 minutes just to get to the box that was actually the gift. And I've often thought about that in relationship to kids, because, you know, they come out as a screaming little hungry package that needs to be fed and changed.
Yeah.
But you quickly discover that, you know, they have a little personality and each one is different. And then you begin to see the gifts that they have and the way God has sort of wired them to respond in particular ways and how each of them are different. Like with your three boys, I'm sure each one has a different kind 100%. Of response to life. You know, even those that might be more rough and tumble are different in their rough and tumbleness.
Yeah.
You know, so being able to unwrap that package, if you will, and then appreciate it for what it is. And if we trust that God is indeed sovereign and good, which we believe he is, then I also believe that he doesn't waste kids in a home that has a dad who can't raise that kid. I believe that every father has the ability to invest in and raise a healthy, godly man of God, you know, in his child. And so he's got to tap into that and say, okay, he may be different than me, but how can I connect with him?
Yeah.
And so again, you know, being able to just help dad say, okay, you got to spend time with him one-on-one and not include a whole bunch of other people. Because one of the things about sensitive boys is they don't mind doing things with other people, but they don't feel like they're really seen or heard or known if they're doing things with a bunch of other folks.
Mm.
They want one-on-one, eyeball-to-eyeball time.
Yeah.
And so they're going to be a little more time-consuming.
Yeah.
They typically, however, won't be as mischievous or bad as some of the rough and tumble counterparts, you know, because those guys are taking risks. They're, you know, doing all the crazy stuff and, you know, seeing how far they can push the envelope. Whereas a sensitive boy is typically a little bit more of a rule follower, a little bit of a perfectionist. His disappointment will not come at breaking the rules. His disappointment will come at his inability to achieve perfection.
Oh, that is such a good point, especially in our culture today that is strive after accomplishments and awards and that sort of thing. I could see that being, that makes perfect sense that he would be more vulnerable to overextending himself in areas just to try and achieve a standard that he has set up for himself or what he believes his parents may expect of him and really end up doing harm.
Yeah, it really can. You know, I tell dads, when you go to correct a sensitive boy, you need to be super careful about the way you do it because he is perceiving so much more than the words you're saying.
Wow.
You know, he is perceiving your tone. He is perceiving your posture. He is perceiving your facial expression. And so I said, it's always best if you're going to correct him to start off with maybe what are the good things you saw him do that day or what is something positive about the situation? And then say, but you know, son, I really think we could have had a different response here. Mm-hmm. And maybe if we'd have done this.
Yeah.
And those little subtle kind of things communicate to him really loudly. If you come in screaming and yelling and saying you're an idiot, I can't believe you did this and that kind of stuff. Well, boy, he's taking those words and he is burying those words in his heart. And he's going to leave that situation thinking, my dad thinks I'm an idiot, even though dad doesn't think that. And he just said it because he was mad, you know.
Right.
But he's going to really, really ruminate and meditate and think about those words that we use. So we have to be super careful when it comes to what we say to sensitive kids.
Absolutely. And you know, what it brings to mind too, even with the rough and tumble side, it's that encouragement that we have to be flexible with who our children are, because how they act and react really varies depending on the setting, who they're around and that sort of thing, to where, you know, it's we have a tendency to want to classify our kids in one way and just only do you reach them in that one way. But, you know, I've got some of my boys who are more on the rough and tumble side, but yet when you get them one-on-one, they're more on that sensitive. So it's more of, okay, well, maybe I need to adjust the influence, or maybe I need to step in and regulate who my children are hanging out with, depending on how it's affecting them. So it's a challenge to us as parents as well to recognize that, you know, there's no one and done, 100% easy way to classify a kid, but then recognize where they shift more often and then to kind of take in those natural factors and then adjust our approach to meet the kid. So that's, I love what you just said. That's fantastic.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. And I think too, it's helpful in the world that we live in, the culture that we're in, to help them also understand that not always what you feel will define who you are.
Oh, amen.
And that's just so incredibly important today because so many of the young people I'm seeing, you know, and when I say young people, I mean 18 to 26, 27 year old guys that are coming to see me. A lot of times, you know, they're saying, well, you don't understand, but I felt this way since I was five or six or four or, you know, eight.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, I understand that, but I think what you're feeling is not gayness or queerness. But it's actually a desire for masculinity that you weren't receiving and you didn't quite know how to process that. So all of a sudden, by the time you were old enough to understand what masculinity was or how it was to be lived out, was also a time when you were going through puberty and your hormones are raging and all that stuff gets crossed over. And the next thing you know, I'm having these fantasies about people that I just want to be like, or I just want to know, or I just want to be able to understand because I don't understand them. And so that's very different than homosexuality per se. I mean, it feels homosexual, but it certainly isn't who you are. And again, one of the things we say at Living Hope all the time is that our feelings only tell us how we are at a given moment. They never tell us who we are.
Yes.
And
oh my gosh.
When you have a feeling, you have to pay attention to it. Feelings are not bad. They're something God created in us, but He created them in us as sort of like caution lights on a road that are flashing and say, hey, something's going on, pay attention. You know, so if I feel a pain in my stomach, I need to think, oh, well, maybe I ate some, you know, bad sushi or something, you know.
Yeah.
But if the pain persists over a couple of days, I might need to think, well, wait a minute, maybe I've got an ulcer, or maybe my gallbladder's messed up or something, you know, so I need to go get it checked on. And so we need to understand that feelings are good. Mm-hmm. But they're just signs and symbols of something else. And sometimes they can be deceptive because our feelings are so often influenced by our circumstances and situations. And as those circumstances and situations change, our feelings can change. Much like you were talking about a second ago, you know, how you respond to your kids in different environments are very different.
Yeah.
You know, if I correct my child in front of a bunch of his friends, that's going to be somewhat humiliating. Mm. But if I take that same child with the same correction, but take him off by himself and talk to him one-on-one and say, hey, here's what's going on, man. I need you to change this. That's a whole different situation. And he feels completely different in the treatment of those two corrective measures.
Yeah. Gosh. And you know, that's so brilliant because our culture today, especially LGBTQ ideology, it hyper-focuses on feelings. Like feelings are the core of who you are. They are the cause. When you just affirm that, actually they can, more often than not, they're the symptom of an underlying issue. And I love that affirmation that you use at Living Hope. I mean, we say something similar around our house that, you know, feelings are real because we never want to belittle or reduce someone's feelings.
Right.
That feelings are real, but they're not always true. And so we have to use, that's that art of discernment where it's okay, if we have a feeling, now we need to go and get to the bottom of what is the cause, the source of this feeling? And is it an accurate representation of what's going on, or is it a skewed perception of something that we may not be understanding?
That's right. As we look through scripture, which of course is always my go-to when we're trying to figure out what we do in life about anything, but particularly with kids, you know, we see that old passage in, you know, Deuteronomy 6 about, you know, not train up, but the hero Israel, the Lord is your God, and you will, you know, when you walk in the way, when you lie down, when you move, or, you know, when you're traveling through life, everything you do, make sure you're teaching and discipling your child and show them the beauty of God's love for them and your love for them and that sort of thing and how important that is. But then also we see throughout scripture the idea of verbal blessing that seems to be placed upon children by parents and how both the blessings and the curses can have huge impacts on the child's life. And then when you get to the New Testament, we see this passage in Matthew 3 with Jesus where he's baptized.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Jesus is one of those super unique characters, obviously. I mean, he's the Son of God and you know, the spotless lamb.
Kind of special, you know.
Yeah, it's just a little bit special.
Yeah.
But one of the really cool things about it is like we don't have a lot of record of like Jesus and Joseph.
Mm, you know, right.
We see a lot of Mary and Joseph kind of in the very, very early stages before Jesus actually comes on the scene and right when he's born. But we don't really see much of anything about Joseph after that. And we assume he passed away at some point early in Jesus' life. But what we do see is when Jesus begins his earthly ministry and he gets baptized by John the Baptist in Matthew 3, we see that there is something that happens from a heavenly fatherly perspective that is pretty powerful. Because it says when all of a sudden he is there and he says, but Jesus answered him, let it be so now. For thus it is fitting for us to fulfill all of the righteousness. He then consented, and when Jesus was baptized, immediately he went up from the water, and behold, the heavens were open to him, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and coming to rest upon him. And behold, a voice from heaven said, this is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased. And I've read that passage a bazillion times and thought about it, prayed about it, studied about it.
Yeah.
And you know, really what's happening in that passage is that Jesus himself is receiving those three A's from his Father.
Yeah.
So is there's the affirmation of this is my beloved Son. I am affirming him. He is who I am. He is me, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there's also the physical aspect in that it says the Spirit of God descended on him like a dove. And it rested on him. Mm. Well, there's some sense of physicality that is taking place, you know, in that moment, that there's something that's resting on Jesus that says, hey, much like a father places his hands on his son to bless him.
Yeah.
God is placing the Spirit upon Jesus and saying, I'm blessing him. And then obviously he's giving attention to what the son is doing because he is present. He is there. He is seeing it. He is witness to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've looked at that and thought, you know, if Jesus as an earthly human needed that kind of affirmation from his father, how much more do you and I also need that same kind of affirmation, attention and affection?
Man.
So I think it's pretty critical for parents. And
absolutely.
And like I said, when I look at the guys that have come through Living Hope over these last 35 years, I see the lack of that and how the devil then takes those three things, twists them into something else and sort of allows them to believe that they can get those three things met by sexual encounters with individuals. Because when you have sex with another human, all three of those things are happening in a really big way. It's one of the reasons why I think God has so many restrictions around our sexual expression.
Yeah.
Is because when you express that kind of intimacy, you're getting affirmation, attention, and affection.
Yeah. Wow. Golly, that is incredible. No, you're absolutely right. And so one thing that I know is probably coming to the minds of some of our listeners is, okay, our family situation, it's broken. Maybe dad is not present, or if he is present, he's just not all that involved. Like, what sort of advice would you have for families who may not have a present father figure? Like, is there a way that their boys can get this maybe from, you know, friends, church? Sure. Like, what would they do in that situation?
Yeah. I mean, I was a single adult minister for a long time. And one of the things I talked a lot with our single adult moms who are raising kids is how difficult it is for them to get their sons healthily connected to other men.
Yeah.
Because as you know, even in our world today, I mean, it's kind of scary to let your boy go out with, you know, somebody you don't really know or it's not related to you. And even if they are related, sometimes that's a scary thing, you know?
Right.
So I believe this is one of the places that the church could really step up and make a huge difference. Because if you're part of a community of faith, it's awesome to be able to have some men within that church who see those single moms and get together as a group of men and say, you know, we're going to do some things with these boys. And so rather than it being a one-on-one thing, maybe a two-on-one thing where it's one boy and two dads or two, you know, it could be college students even. Who say, hey, we want to make an investment in little Johnny. And we know he doesn't, you know, his dad's not around, but we want to take him and do things. We want to know, what does he love? What does he like? How can we go do that? And maybe someone even being a bit of a coordinator as to, you know, here's Johnny over here. He loves computers and art and music. And so we've got these college students over here. These guys are in, you know, they're learning instruments or they're in school for music. Maybe that would be a great fit. You know, they would enjoy each other's company and that sort of thing. But giving opportunities for that young man to see other men that are exhibiting some of the giftings that he may naturally have or inclinations that he naturally has, but exhibiting them in the Christ-like way and honoring God with those giftings.
Yeah. Oh, so absolutely.
I think that's one of the ways that can help. And then I think, you know, purposefully maybe looking to some of the other relatives within the family to say, you know, how could an uncle be engaged or a granddad or, you know, even a significant friend that is, you know, been around a long time, vetted and trusted, that sort of thing. But even still, I mean, I always warn parents, in the world we live in, it is just so unfortunate that we have so much exposure to so many things that we have to be super guarded with our children. At the same time, not being overly doting to the point that they never feel as though they can stretch their wing, you know, and fly. So it's that hard balance, you know, hard balance.
Yeah. Yeah, that you have to keep it from not being that helicopter parent, but still nurturing enough so that they survive the young years. Well, Ricky, thank you so much. I mean, there is just, we could go on for hours, but I'm just so grateful for just these moments of wisdom that you have given us. Can you provide our listeners with maybe a couple resources that are your favorite, how they can reach and connect with your ministry? How can they just further their knowledge in this?
Yeah. If you want to know more about our ministry, the website is livehope.org, livehope.org. We have tons of resources there. The talks that you heard me do and you've seen me do several times, both of those talks are on our main page about halfway down. I have one for guys and one for girls. So also talking about how mom and dad need to communicate the three A's to the girls. And then also for resources, I would say go to our other site, which is biblicalsexuality.net. And you look there for resources and you'll see we got a huge listing of books that we have vetted and are consistent with the biblical worldview. Y'all's books obviously there. And so being able to look at some of the books, kind of where you are, what you're looking for, there's different things listed there, particular resources that we feel like are really good to address these issues. But the biggest thing of all is just taking the time to be present with your kids. I can't tell you how much that is worth, both in dollars, real dollars, but also in emotional and psychological stability within your child. You know, you're only going to have your kid from zero to maybe 18, 19 years old, something like that. That will be over in a blink of an eye. And so being able to really cherish every one of those moments and being able to invest in your child in those moments, be aware and giving attention in those moments is so significant. I always tell young parents, you know, please be willing to make less money for a period of time. Mm-hmm. Your kids won't always be young, but yeah. you're always going to get older. So yeah. they're going to leave and you'll have plenty of time to make money, mm-hmm. but really concentrate on investing in relationship with them, because what you do there will last them the rest of their life. And if they don't get it, they're mm-hmm. going to spend the rest of their life looking for it.
Oh, amen. Thank you so much for that, Ricky. And parents, we hope this has been a blessing for you. Stay tuned for our next podcast, where we are going to tackle all these issues, but from the girl's standpoint. And Ricky, I just thank you so much on behalf of Mama Bear for being here and speaking wisdom into our parents.
Thank you.
Alrighty, folks. So you can find more information on mamabearapologetics.com. You can find books, recommended resources, and further blogs and podcasts to help you raise children to be warriors in the faith. So check us out, and we look forward to seeing you next time.